It's Wendy Snyder. It's Steve Bertrand in for Bill Leff. And I don't even know where to begin with this. We touched on this on the first half of our show today. And what's going on in Paris, what happened on Friday, has puzzled us. We all have opinions. We need to find out more. So we bring in an expert, a terrorism expert and professor of history at DePaul University, Tom Mikaitis. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
All right. I don't know where to begin. Steve, where shall we start with the whole Parisian tragedy?
Tom, here's my thing. And we brought this up earlier, but people keep talking about how this was such a sophisticated attack. And when I hear that, I don't understand, because to me it seems like it was a very simple thing that anyone might do at any time.
Well, what they mean by sophisticated is that it was very well thought out. Planning probably went back as far as September. They had coordinated, you know, carrying out, we saw that with the Tsarnaev brothers, to just go and bomb someplace. That isn't that complicated. To pull off near simultaneous attacks at high-value targets in a manner that is paralyzes a city does take a little bit more. But you're right, it's not as difficult as people may seem. It took eight people. They had to have good security. They had to preposition weapons. They had to have a good bomb maker. You know, that took some coordination. But the disconcerting thing is that it's a pretty low-tech operation, and that's what we're finding out we're increasingly vulnerable to.
All right, and here's what we know. Three teams of terrorists staged coordinated attacks at six locations throughout Paris late Friday, including the concert hall, restaurants, at least two restaurants, the Stadium of France or Stade de France, and at least 352 people were wounded in the attacks, 99 of them seriously. Is it 129 people are dead? Seven terrorists were killed, one fewer than ISIS said were involved when they claimed responsibility. And then we still have that one Belgian member who is on the loose at this point, correct?
Well, they caught, yes, there is one on the loose. They actually captured the third French brother. So they've captured two people, and that's really a good sign, you know, a good thing that they may be able to get much more information as to how this transpired. But, you know, this is not new, and this is, I think, one of my big frustrations. I've been talking about this since 2008 when a team of 10, you know, Pakistani Lashkar-e-Taiba terrorists went into Mumbai, India, and conducted a series of coordinated attacks there that killed about 160-plus people. So, you know, this is the new face of terrorism. It's not nearly as new as we think, but this is because it's so much easier to do. I said at the time of the Boston bombings, we were really fortunate that they were as amateurish as they were, that they didn't use light automatic weapons with extra clips and you know, grenade-style weapons. They made these rather poorly designed, you know, still lethal, but not nearly as much as they could have been, you know, pressure cooker bombs.
What about retaliation for, was it Jihad John or Jihadi John that was killed several days ago? You're saying that these attacks were planned maybe as early as September.
Yeah, and the fact that they hit a stadium suggested, you know, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, they were in the works. Could they have pulled the trigger on them a little earlier to make a point? Yeah, we don't know. I'm beginning to think it's more likely that they, you know, this was already planned for this time. But the thing that's really interesting here is that as much as people are reeling from this, I think in some ways these series of attacks are a sign that the pressure we're bringing to bear on them in the Middle East is actually working. Because they're lashing out, trying to get their enemies to back off. They hit the Turks a couple of weeks ago. They blew up the Russian airline. I mean, everybody but the Egyptians admit that it was a terrorist bomb over Sinai right after Russia steps up its pressure against them. People don't realize the Beirut bombing, Hezbollah, which is a Shia, you know, organization, has been going over the border into Syria fighting ISIS almost from the beginning of this thing. So what do? They bomb them. Then France has stepped up its attacks, not just since the Charlie Hebdo bombings in January, but again in September. They increased their pressure. Lo and behold, they hit France. Now we have a video threatening Washington, D.C. So they're hitting at the far abroad because they're beginning to be squeezed at home. And I think that's, strange as that may seem, that's the one positive sign here.
How much of the fact that it happened in France is domestic as compared to international? I mean, you know, it seems as if France is unique in some ways when it comes to their Muslim population, in that some of this has to do with interior politics as well. Is that fair?
That is a fair statement. It's a complex thing. It's important to say, though, that you'll hear pundits on the far left saying, oh, well, you know, look what they did, deserve it. Nobody deserves this. That's ridiculous. But on the other hand, they have the largest Muslim population in Europe. This is an aggressively secular culture, which has created a lot of tensions. This whole thing over whether you can wear the hijab in public buildings or schools and so on—you may recall that, the headscarf and whatever.
Sure.
And European states are ethnically constructed, so you know assimilation is problematic. Not that we haven't had our own issues with that. There is an internal dynamic, and then the other thing is, large number of French men have gone to Syria, gotten trained because they hold French passports. Some of them have come back. So what you have here is something of a domestic, international kind of nexus that was triggered in this particular incident. And obviously that's disconcerting. And sadly, it's going to have terrible blowback. I mean, Marie Le Pen's National Front right-wing party is going to use this as grist for their mill. And the very delicate negotiations over what to do with Syrian refugees are even more dicey now, because one of the terrorists that was killed had a Syrian passport and supposedly came into the European Union through Greece.
And now we have governors in this country sort of falling over themselves to say that they're not going to allow any Syrian refugees into each of his, or I don't know, perhaps there's a female governor too, her states. And I don't understand that. What control does Governor Rauner have over whether a refugee crosses the border and comes into Illinois?
Absolutely none. This is political posturing. That's all that is. Look, I'll tell you the one area of concern with refugees that you have, we have two, but one, in terms of, you want to worry very much about the unaccompanied young men. Large numbers of them are unaccompanied young men. Those are the ones that are most problematic. Bringing in refugee families, many of whom, by the way, are fleeing ISIS. It's not like they love these guys, is a problem. The other thing to keep in mind, you want to produce more recruits for ISIS, be really xenophobic when they arrive. If they face discrimination and prejudice, they're already traumatized, that makes them much more vulnerable to recruitment. So, it's very popular. This is an election year. I mean, the pundits are, hitting the bully pulpits about this is bad, that's bad, we got to seal our borders. We're first of all not talking about taking in that many, and second of all, that would send a bad message. These people are already victims.
We have Tom Mikaitis on the line with us, professor of history at DePaul University and terrorism expert. You mentioned the young people and a lot of young men that are not connected to anyone. There have been reports that PlayStation 4 has been used in some of the planning and communication and perhaps recruiting. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, I think you probably, a couple of a year or so ago, someone in ISIS developed a jihadi recruiting kind of game video based on Grand Theft Auto. I haven't seen it, but it's so easy to communicate and plan. I mean, in the globally interconnected and complex world in which we live, social media. I do quite a bit of work on this when I do counterterrorism education in various places around the world. We talk about social media. It's a force multiplier. It aids in this. But as we're seeing in the Paris example, there is always going to be a human contact. People don't log on and instantly radicalize. They've got to be handled. They've got to be connected. They've got to, you have your lone wolves, but most of those in the United States, we've caught the young man from Bolingbrook and so on. It's these networked, connected, highly trained individuals are the ones that are most worrisome.
Okay, listeners, if you have questions, 312-981-7200. We've got the guy for you. He's an author, several books on terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul. And 312-981-7200 is the number to call. Tom, you okay on time?
I'm fine with time, too. I also have a blog if you don't want to write about all this stuff. It's tmckite@wordpress.com. But, yeah, I've got plenty of time.
Okay, hang on, and we'll get that website and put it out there again. And 312-981-7200, you can get in via phone line or text, because we all have so many questions about what's going on, what happened, rather, in Paris and the after effects. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Steve Bertrand, 720 WGN. All right, Bill's off this week, and what a good week to be gone, because really I can't stop thinking and talking about what happened in Paris, and I know you are all with us on that. 312-981-7200. We're talking to professor of history at DePaul, terrorism expert, author. His name is Tom Mikaitis. And what is your blog again, Tom?
I'm going to give you the exact number. It is, tmikait.wordpress.com. And I also have a Twitter, which is at Dr. Mikaitis.
Okay. And T. Mikait, spell that, because it can be taken many different
ways. Yeah. tmikait.wordpress.com.
Okay. All right. We will put a link up on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, because you're really fascinating to talk to about this. And we have calls. We have listeners that want to talk about what's going on in Paris and what happened and the retaliation, which before we get to that, real quickly, you mentioned the video that came out earlier today saying that, you know, first of all, France was very quick to retaliate doing some airstrikes against some ISIS strongholds in Syria. And now a video comes out earlier today saying that anyone who cooperates and joins in will be in trouble, and they're targeting Washington, D.C. How do we believe this?
Well, they're always targeting us. I think there is an increased likelihood of an attack. We're the only one in the coalition that's gone after them and hasn't been hit, with the exception of the British. On the other hand, this isn't going to deter anybody. Believe me, those strikes by the French, that's a calling card. That's just the beginning. ISIS has bought a world of hurt, because I think if you look at what's going on at the G20, I think we're even reaching a tacit understanding with the Russians that you're going to see increased coordinated attacks against ISIS. And they're already talking about invoking Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, NATO's founding document, which we used after 9/11, and our allies, including France, backed us to say, this is an act of war. Attack one of us, you've attacked us all.
All right, let's get to these calls here, because listeners have questions. We all do. And Bill is on the line. Bill, Tom Mikaitis.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Professor. Fox Business reported today that there's a report that came out today saying that there's already 71 ISIS recruits in the states that have already signed up for missions. Do you know anything about that? And they've listed the states.
Yeah. It's very hard to get precise intelligence on that. The best estimates we have is between 1 and 200 people have gone to join ISIS. How many have come back, we don't really know, because ISIS's recruitment patterns using social media and various other things are also to, you know, to tell people, hey, you can strike a blow in the country, you can stay where you are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's plausible. I really question how they, you know, that's any more than an educated guess. Because I don't know where that, without an identification of what their intelligence source is, I would view that with a healthy bit of skepticism. On the other hand, we're a free, open society. It's just not that hard to come and go. And it's very easy to get weapons here. I'm not making a statement on that one way or the other, but, you know, pulling off a peristyle and attack in some ways would even be easier in the United States than it would be in other places.
Bill, thank you for calling. We're going to try and get to most of your calls. And here we have Tom. Hi, Tom.
Tom, yes, Professor, can you tell me how many civilian casualties occur when we or the French or any of the other people that are bombing the various peoples in the Mideast, how many civilian casualties are those? This is war. The punks that attack the Paris people, we see as punks. They see them as warriors. When we drop bombs, what happens to civilians there, and what's different about that than what these punks in France did?
Well, the same thing that happens when you drop bombs in conventional war. There's this kind of naive notion that, you know, conventional wars are clean and unconventional ones are dirty. I mean, 47 million Europeans died in World War II. Most were civilians. Yes, civilians died, especially when ISIS is perfectly willing to use them as human shields. They will, in fact, they don't mind hiding in mosques, hospitals, schools, civilian neighborhoods, precisely to create the collateral damage. We try as hard as we can to engage in pinprick strikes like we did when we got Jihadi John. And the key there is, yeah, okay, he was a bad guy, he's gone. But the real key is we had good intelligence on that. A lot die. I don't know how many. I don't know that we know how many, because in these wars, determining who is and is not a civilian is by no means an easy thing. We've lost a number of our soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq because they held fire thinking that someone approaching them was a civilian and turned out not to be. So, you know, it's a tough question. I think we try hard to minimize civilian casualties, but I'm afraid it's unavoidable.
Thank you, Tom. War is not pretty. It isn't. And
the one, there is a difference. There is something you asked about the comparison. The way that we do this, civilians die, but we try very hard not to target them. I mean, the viciousness of the Paris attack is so bad that The Guardian was reporting that one of the shooters, at least, went into the disabled section.
I know, people in wheelchairs.
Because they couldn't get away, and they shot them. Now, you know, how much more of a testament to the barbarism do you need? We don't do that. You know, whatever else you want to say, however well you want, critical you want to be, we don't deliberately target people in that manner. They do. There's no. If you're not one of them, you're not human in their regard.
I want to ask Tom another question. Jeb Bush is sort of taking his lumps today, and I don't think it's altogether fair. He apparently said something to the effect that, you know, we need to find a safe haven for the Syrian refugees in Syria, but then he said, but we need to bring the Christians out. And, you know, people are jumping on that. But I think what he's talking about is this very specific Yazidi Christian population that has been absolutely slaughtered by just about every side, correct?
Not every side, actually. The Yazidis have lived in Iraq peacefully for centuries. It's ISIS that has attacked them. It's important to remember, though, the vast majority of victims of ISIS are other Muslims. This is a civil war. I wrote this one of the pieces on the blog page I talked to you about. Civil war within Islam. This is a fight between Sunni and Shia. It's also a fight between moderate and radical Sunni, and that has to be kept in mind. The safe area in Syria, to me, is a formula for disaster. That's what happened in Srebrenica. You create a safe area, but they also want to use it as a staging area for anti-ISIS fighters. That means you congregate refugees in a place that is going to get targeted. That's not a particularly good solution. You know, again, I can't say it strongly enough. This is not something unique and inherent to Islam. We can't forget what happened in Charleston a couple months ago. You know, every religion on the planet is capable of perversion into this kind of violent activity.
All right. This is so fascinating, and I apologize to some of the listeners. Don, Stan, we did not have time to get you on the air. You can check out his blog. I'm on it right now. It is TMOCKAIT, TomMcKite.wordpress.com. We'll put a link up at our page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Tom McKite is professor of history at DePaul, terrorism expert, author of many, many books. Thank you so much. It's nice to talk to you terribly under these circumstances, but we learn a lot more when we have you on the air.
Thank you. I'll be happy to help anytime. Have a nice day.
You as well. Really, he helps make me feel a little better, like they're panicking because we are weakening the ISIS cells. That's what I'm hoping, and they're acting out of desperation. I hope that to be true.
I hope he's right.
All right, so we'll take a quick break. We have news coming up. We're going to talk to Judd Surratt. What a great weekend for Blackhawks games. It was really fantastic. Duncan Keith is back and cuter than ever, may I say.
I think so too, Wendy.
And who else is cuter than ever? Noted pet expert Steve Dale. He will be coming up later on as well. And Bill's off this week, enjoying some time off. Not sure what he's doing. Probably buying some new toys.
Painting the house.
He doesn't do that. Steve's in his place. It's Wendy Snyder, Steve Bertrand, 720 WGN.